This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, U.S. foreign and national security policy priorities for 2016. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel, coming to you as we do every year at this time from the campus of Georgetown University, right here in Washington. As U.S. President Barack Obama enters the final year of his second term, we'll talk about the achievements and setbacks of his presidency. While it may be months, if not years, before the success of the Cuba, Iran, and Trans-Pacific Partnership deals can truly be gauged, our guests will discuss the challenges ahead for the United States in 2016. As 2015 came to a close, we witnessed the horrific terror attacks in Paris and then here at home in San Bernardino, California, the latter illustrating the nexus between the growing strength of the so-called Islamic State group, also known as ISIL or Daesh, and the easy availability of assault weapons in the United States. And as we enter 2016, the U.S. presidential campaign will inevitably politicize discussions about U.S. foreign policy, even as President Obama tries to cement his legacy in that arena. In the wake of the chaos emanating from the instability and conflict in the Middle East, particularly Syria and Iraq, national security is emerging as the number one campaign issue. We'll discuss this larger question as well as the more specific foreign policy and national security challenges for 2016 with our distinguished Georgetown University analysts, Anthony Clark Arend and George Little. Professor Arend is Senior Associate Dean for Graduate and Faculty Affairs in the Walsh School of Foreign Service. He's also Professor of Government and Foreign Service and Director of the Master of Science in Foreign Service. And George Little. He's former Assistant to the U.S. Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs and was Chief of Media Relations for the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA. Currently, he's a partner at the Brunswick Group. That's a Washington-based public relations firm, and he's on the Board of Advisors for the Master of Science in Foreign Service program at Georgetown University. And both gentlemen join me here on the campus of Georgetown. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Anthony, it's great to be here.
Anthony Clark Arend, also known as Tony, here on the program. As we enter 2016, what, in your view, are the most serious foreign policy and national security challenges facing President Obama as he enters his final year of his last term?
Well, I would have to say that without a doubt, the challenge of ISIS or ISIL or Daesh or whatever we want to call that group and what it means for the situation in Syria and Iraq is clearly the biggest foreign policy challenge that the administration has. It's not only a challenge because objectively it is a critical problem in the international system, but with the election coming up and in the American political system, it is something that the public is very much engaged in. With the actions in San Bernardino, in Paris, in Beirut, and elsewhere, the people are looking for some kind of way in which the United States administration has established a strategy to address the problem. And so I think that's clearly the biggest problem right now in 2016.
George Little, how do you see it?
I would absolutely agree with Tony that ISIS poses severe challenges to the United States and our allies around the world. In addition, I think we need to bear in mind what Russia is doing and President Putin's actions. He's become more assertive over the past year or so, and I think here in 2016, we could see more of that. We also need to keep our eye on the ball on cybersecurity as well. I think that we haven't gotten our arms around that necessarily as a government, and we need to put more effort behind finding ways to prevent cyber attacks on the U.S. government and on corporations. And finally, I think we need to be very mindful of the fact that this is indeed an election year, and the world is going to be looking to the United States and to our presidential candidates for some signal about where American leadership is headed. And I'm quite frankly concerned about that, given some of the dialogue that we've heard over the past several months. We need to have responsible leadership at the top. Politics used to stop at the water's edge. That's no longer the case, and I think we need to take a clear look at that as a country.
Turning back to you, Tony Arend, to pick up on some of the issues you both brought up, particularly with regard to Syria, the challenge of ISIS, also known as Daesh. At the end of 2015, the Security Council at the UN came together. There was a resolution on the issue to try to solve the problem diplomatically. Are you optimistic about that?
Well, I think the Security Council is only ever going to be as successful as the permanent members are able to collaborate and cooperate. I think this was a good signal that they were able to bring the finance ministers of the Security Council together to look at the financing problem, because one of the big challenges that ISIS has that we haven't seen in other terrorist groups is that they actually control territory. They're able to extort money from individuals. They're able to sell oil. They're able to sell antiquities. And as a consequence, we have to approach them differently. So that was a good sign, but it's only a really small part of the puzzle. We need a comprehensive strategy. I think the United States needs to take a leadership role in working, and I'm sorry to say, with the Russians and with other permanent members of the Security Council, with the regimes in the region, to put together some kind of comprehensive strategy. We just haven't had a comprehensive strategy. The financing piece is a part of it, but we need a lot more. And I think the American public in particular sees this lack of strategy, and that's actually playing into some of the worst rhetoric we've seen in this campaign. My friend Dr. Little was talking a little bit about the importance of American leadership. I think the lack of a clear strategy is actually allowing people on various sides of the campaign to make comments which I think are very dangerous for the future of American leadership.
ISIS, as you said, it controls territory. They make $1 million a day through their extortions and selling of oil. But really, you can't bomb an idea. So that leads me to ask you, George Little, how do you see this comprehensive strategy? At the end of 2015, we heard President Obama say, we're going to really continue with the current strategy, but intensify it. Will that be enough? Well, and then you brought also the Russians into the picture.
Right. I'm pessimistic about the chances for a comprehensive strategy to succeed in 2016 when it comes to Syria. I do think that we have made gains against ISIS, and the president is absolutely right. We have brought pressure to bear. I suspect that ISIS will lose some territory in 2016 because the Iraqi army will become stronger. They showed some weakness in 2015. And I think that the coalition, to include the Russians, broadly speaking, will have some effect on their territory. But make no mistake about it, they continue to plan operations, external operations. They will continue to be a menace in the Middle East, and we need to keep up the pressure. But I don't see any signs that the multiple groups, and ISIS is just one group in that region that we have to worry about. It's dozens of groups in that area that I think need to come together at the end of the day, and I just don't see that happening in the near future.
Well, turning back to you, Tony, to talk a bit more about the various parties, we see Russia saying something but doing the opposite. They say that they're against ISIL, but for them, anyone who opposes Bashar al-Assad is considered a terrorist, and they have most of their airstrikes have been against the mainstream opposition and civilians. Is there a possibility for convergence between the United States and Russia and, of course, Iran down the line?
Well, I think from the standpoint of a convergence between the United States and Russia, there is a possibility, but it's very unpalatable. But I nonetheless think that we need to put it on the table. Several years ago, I would have said that we should have moved against Assad, that we should have supported the Free Syrian Army, and we should have done what we could to change the regime at that point in time. I think that ship has long sailed. And I think we're in a position right now where if Assad were to go tomorrow, the power vacuum that would be created would be worse, and the situation on the ground would be so much worse than it is today. So my sense is we need to talk to the Russians, and we need to say, look, our ultimate goal is the removal of Assad. We get that. Our ultimate goal is the degradation of ISIS. We know that that's not a short-term goal. But in the meantime, we need to put together some kind of transition where the United States is willing to say, we're going to have to live with Assad for a while, because if we try to eliminate him now, we're going to make things worse. How can that happen? I don't know that the administration is right now willing and able to do that. It may take the next administration to work out some kind of deal, and maybe that's what we really need. Maybe we just need fresh people in the foreign policy establishment in the United States to be able to move forward on that. But that's a long year.
In my view, the Russians have no incentive in 2016 to change their strategy. They have been given some credit by some around the world for what they've done in Syria, right, wrong, or indifferent. They also have a strategic presence in Syria, too. They have a naval base. So I don't see them changing their game absent some very fundamental change in circumstances.
It's a bit worrisome because I think most analysts would agree that Assad is part of the problem. That is, you know, his regime, and he himself has turned on his own people and helped to create the likes of ISIS and these other very extremist groups. Well, back to you, Anthony Clark Aaron, to talk about the other side of the equation, Iran. There was, of course, the Iran deal last year, and now this year in 2016, the implementation. That's certainly going to be high on President Obama's agenda.
Yes, and I think it's, I believe that the Iran deal was a successful accomplishment. Now, was it the perfect agreement? Absolutely not. But I do think it was probably the best agreement that we were able to get. And I think a lot of people worked together from all sides of the political spectrum to make it happen. So I think that was a good first step. Actually, one of my classmates, Steve Mull, was recently appointed as the person in charge of moving forward to implement the Iran deal and working with a number of people. Now, clearly, the proof is going to be in the pudding, and it's going to depend upon an awful lot of diligence on the part of the administration to move forward. So I think that's a good thing, and it's continuing to move in the right direction. But now that doesn't mean that we've given, or we should be seen as giving, Iran a get-out-of-jail-free card on all kinds of other things they're doing. You know, we talk about imprisoned journalists. We talk about their adventurism in Syria and a variety of other places. And I think it's important to continue to pressure Iran on those fronts. What I don't know is the extent to which John Kerry and others in the State Department are doing that. My suspicion is there is pressure being exerted. But again, I'm hopeful. I think the Iran deal was a good first step. I think we're moving toward implementation, but we'll have to look at that at the end of the year to see ultimately how successful it's been.
This was a courageous and bold move by the president, in my view. The easy thing would be to walk away from a deal with Iran on nuclear weapons. As Tony said, it's probably not perfect. The president has said it's not a perfect deal. But at the end of the day, with the test of time, and no one should underestimate the ability of the United States to assess whether or not the Iranians are holding up to their end of the bargain. But I have to say, I think this will go down as a success for President Obama, unless the Iranians fundamentally cheat. This will be a year of testing that program, but I think it took some political courage to make this happen.
Well, George Little, I've heard critics say, though, that they're very worried, perhaps more worried about Iran's adventurism in the region, its backing of terrorist organizations, the likes of Hezbollah, Hamas, particularly what they're doing in Syria. And with the $150 billion in unfrozen assets coming online perhaps early in this year, that will only encourage them to do more nefarious activities. So the question is, will the administration in its last year, as President Obama wants to cement his legacy, particularly on this deal, will he have the incentive to, in fact, pressure the Iranians on these activities and leverage?
I think there are a lot of levers to pull to pressure the Iranians to become more constructive players on the international stage. You're absolutely right. They continue to support terrorism around the world, and I'm not sure that the unfreezing of assets will necessarily move them more toward that activity. They're already doing it, quite frankly. And just because we have a nuclear deal doesn't mean we have to cooperate with them in other areas. So I think it's really important to be nuanced about the Iranian relationship. We do need to keep the pressure on to prevent them from continuing their terrorist acts. And I think hopefully we'll see some progress in that direction.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Georgetown University professors Anthony Clark Arendt, Senior Associate Dean for Graduate and Faculty Affairs and Professor of Government and Foreign Service, and George Little. He's actually a former assistant to the U.S. Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs. He's currently a partner at the Brunswick Group, and that's a Washington-based public relations and communications firm. We're discussing U.S. foreign policy and national security challenges and priorities in 2016. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Brahim Ben Lusif from Mila in northeastern Algeria. If you want to hear your name on the show, send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us on Facebook. Well, back to you, Anthony Clark Arendt, also known as Tony, here on the program, to talk about a few other issues this year President Obama will be dealing with. For example, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this major trade deal, 12 countries involved. Now, that will need congressional approval. How big of a deal is that? And do you have any sense that it will, in fact, be approved by Congress?
So my suspicion is it actually will be approved by Congress. Arrangements like this are being done as what are called legislative executive agreements, meaning they require a majority vote in both houses of Congress. There's been a significant amount of Republican support for the TPP, so I think it probably will get through Congress. I think it's a very important step forward in continuing to promote free trade around the world, and sort of follows on a whole host of things going all the way back to NAFTA and other such agreements. So I think it will be approved. I think it will be a success. I'm not sure I would rank it as, you know, one of the great foreign policy successes of humankind, but that would be my sense.
George Little, how do you see the TPP as it's known?
I think protectionism in U.S. foreign policy has rarely, if ever, worked. And I think that arrangements like the TPP can be very beneficial to the American economy. And I do think that it will pass at the end of the day. Let's not forget that the Chinese are trying to set up their own versions of the TPP. And so I think it makes it even more important for us to remain an important presence in the world. I do think the rebalance, or the so-called pivot to Asia under this administration, is a successful strategy and the right one.
I think that's a very interesting point. And I think we do need to give President Obama credit for this. He went against many members of his own party on this. In fact, this is one issue on which he and Republicans in Congress are much more in tune, free trade and so forth. So we shall see how that plays out. Another topic that hasn't been brought up yet, but I'm sure you would agree, the climate agreement that was reached at the end of last year in Paris, COP21. Now, this is an issue on which many Republicans don't agree with President Obama. But President Obama has always talked about climate change as a very important issue, something that he wanted to achieve to reduce carbon emissions. Tony, Aaron, how do you see this climate deal without, of course, binding commitments? Can it really survive here in the United States?
Well, you know, it's really hard because, first of all, I think it's absolutely correct to make this a major issue. This might be one of the most important legacy issues historically, because ISIS can come and go, and hopefully they will go, and various other things will happen. But the situation with respect to climate change is continuing to progress in a bad direction. The challenge is people in the country don't seem to get energized about something that seems so far out in the future. They don't seem to understand that, you know, countries like Kiribati and the Marshall Islands are already worrying about being inundated by the Pacific Ocean and trying to relocate their populations, and the situation is going to continue to get worse. So I think it's an important first step. Right now, unfortunately, the mood in the country, though, is not one where most people are energized about this. It is almost as though, and I don't wish this, but it is almost as though we need to have a disaster before we can convince people that we need to move forward in the area of climate change. Now, my hope is, as the political season of the election calms down and we have a new president coming in, that person will be able to move forward to some more concrete steps. But right now, frankly, I don't think most people in the country really care about these issues.
Well, George Little, Tony Aaron brings up a question that we alluded to in the introduction, and that is the nexus between domestic politics and foreign policy or international issues such as climate change. And we know very well that many candidates running for president on the Republican side simply don't even acknowledge global warming is a real issue. So how do you see the climate change deal, even though it isn't a U.S. policy per se, but presumably, and I believe it's true, that the United States was a leader in these Paris talks, and of course it is a priority for President Obama. Can this go forward if a Republican is elected?
You're absolutely right. It is a major achievement for President Obama. We weren't necessarily front and center in Paris, but the U.S. did play a significant role. And you're absolutely right, too, that many on the Republican side have strongly criticized climate change views and this agreement. I think that's an indication of what Tony pointed to earlier, and that's public opinion throughout the United States, which is mixed at best on the climate change issue. But I do think at the end of the day that this will be seen by historians as probably the most important international environmental agreement of the past generation. And it could fall apart. But at the end of the day, it is a major achievement. And I hope that if there is a Republican president in 2017, that they don't roll it back.
Well, that leads me to another big issue, Tony Aaron. We talked about this last year at these microphones, and that's the opening to Cuba, a topic on which not all, but many Republicans are not in favor. This was, again, was an executive order by President Obama. He wanted to move forward Cuba, seeing that democracy and change wasn't happening in the current climate, and decided to change course. How do you see this opening to Cuba going forward this year?
Well, I think it was a major accomplishment by the administration. And I would say historically and from a legal perspective, if I could, the president has the independent authority to recognize foreign governments. So this sort of falls squarely within the president's authority to do it. I always think of Roosevelt recognizing the communist government of the Soviet Union back in the day because he realized a change needed to be made there. There needed to be some kind of collaboration. And so this really does fall within the president's clear authority under the Constitution. In some respects, the time has been ripe for this change. And the one thing I would say is while there has been some opposition among the Republican Party and perhaps some others, it's been muted opposition. There really hasn't been that much hue and cry about it, I think, because the time had come. So I think this was a major step, and I think it was a big success.
Major accomplishment, essentially a not event.
Well, of course, you and I all know that, you know, Cuba, it's a domestic political issue, really, here in the United States because of Florida.
Right.
Electoral politics dictated that, you know, that we maintain this hostile relationship with our very near neighbor.
Right.
But one thing, though, although it is his authority, rather his prerogative as the executive, Tony Arendt, still yet, there's the embargo. And for that, George Little, to be lifted, we need congressional action. You see that happening.
It will happen at some point. I don't know if it's going to happen in 2016. There's a lot that's not going to happen in Congress in 2016, I'm afraid.
Right.
But I do think it will happen eventually because the tide of history is going in that direction. It's interesting to me that there was no backlash, even in Miami-Dade County. Very few voices of strong opposition came out, even in the Cuban-American community. And I think that's noteworthy.
Well, speaking of Congress, back to you, Tony Arendt, to talk about to what extent it will be an obstacle in this year, 2016, for President Obama, his last year.
So I think, and I don't mean to be a great pessimist, but it's absolutely going to be an obstacle. I think there may be some areas where the president will be able to work collaboratively in foreign policy with Congress. But at this point, it's waiting him out. I think Congress is just going to wait the president out on so many issues, and I don't think we can really expect to see any kind of major initiative go through, barring anything unforeseen, barring, again, a huge disaster.
The dysfunction of Congress is a national security issue, actually. And as my former boss, Leon Panetta, has said on many occasions, it's no longer good politics to make a deal in Washington. You actually pay a price when you make a deal. That's not how our democracy is set up. That's not how Congress should function. And we are drawing the battle lines so starkly that we can't cross over and shake hands on even the most cooperative kinds of issues.
And it didn't used to be like that. Not too many years ago, when Ronald Reagan could sit down with Tip O'Neill or Howard Baker could sit down with Jimmy Carter to get the Panama Canal Treaty through the Senate, there really was a lot of collaboration in foreign policy with the idea that George mentioned earlier, that politics did end at the water's edge.
That leads me to ask you both for one last question, to just take a look at the landscape, both domestic and international, and come up with any other thoughts with respect to challenges for President Obama in this last year of his last term that we haven't touched upon so far.
Well, the one thing I think it's very important to say, especially in light of some of the remarks being made by Donald Trump and others, is this anti-Islamic rhetoric is horrible. It's toxic. It's fundamentally contrary to American values, to tradition, to decency. And I think it's something that this country really needs to get in touch with. I know the president has spoken out against it. I know a number of Republican leaders, Lindsey Graham, for instance, has spoken out against it. But that's one of the things that really troubles me, is that this kind of rhetoric seems to be resonating with a portion of America, and it is so contrary to what this country is about. And I think that's one thing that needs to be addressed by the president and certainly by the next president.
George Little, the last word goes to you.
I would agree. I'm concerned about some of the rhetoric that we've heard. America does have intolerant people. But America is not an intolerant nation, and I think that's worth bearing in mind. So I think we need to take a hard look at ourselves. This is going to be, I think, a year of profound uncertainty in American foreign policy, and we won't see a lot of that self-resolve until after the election.
On that note, I'd like to thank my guests and hosts here at Georgetown University, Professor Anthony Clark Arendt and George Little. Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Encounter was produced here in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Gary Jaffe. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voices of America.